Hello and welcome to Grace Unscripted, where we share stories of the people in and around Grace Church without any script, just real, raw conversations about life change through Jesus. I'm your host, Audrey Wallace, and today my guest is Bobby Claypool. We just got finished talking, and I really love talking with her because she goes back to my early days at Grace, and I never really knew her story. But if I had to summarize it in one word, it would be redeemed. She talks about this word a lot. Listen for it in her conversation. In fact, one quote I wrote down was that I'm going to lean into God first and ask questions later because he can redeem anything. And as you hear her story, really of two completely different lives, you'll see how he has redeemed her story. Bobby, welcome to Unscripted.
Thank you very much. So good to see you again.
Yeah, so good to see you again. For our listeners, we were just laughing over this because we used to see each other all the time. What? 18 years ago, 17, 16, 15 years ago when we were early here at the church and involved in a lot of the same things. Mm-hmm. And now, as we all know, Grace has grown so much and we have different buildings and different services and different ministries that spread us out. So we don't see each other as often.
We do not.
But I feel like when I was thinking about getting to interview Bobby Claypool, I was like, she is a pillar is the word for me. Grace, you know, yeah. I think back to when I first became a life group leader, mm-hmm. and were you at that women's retreat that we did out in the boondocks?
I don't remember.
And Starla and I'm not even remember all the ladies that were there. Mm-hmm. Anyways, I feel like you were there. If you weren't, you were in my spirit while I was there. But so many things, they'll all come out as we talk here, but. Yeah. You're a pillar to me.
Oh, Grace. Wow. Well, I have been around for a long time, nearly as long as Jeff Bogue, because I started here just about 9 months after he started.
Wow. That's so when you say here, you mean this building, which is
this
Gent
building,
Road.
Correct. Okay. So I moved from Mansfield, Ohio to Akron, struggled to find a church for a little while here that met the needs of my girls. I was a single mom, okay. Moved to Akron with three daughters. I have two sons, but they were married at that point in time. Mm-hmm. And so the way that I came to Grace Church and the way that things fell into place are all just part of his story.
Well, there is like a edge of the seat. No spoiler alerts right now. Let's roll it back. Let's start a little earlier, get to that point, because sure. I'm so curious to hear how you came to Akron and Grace sure. and Jesus.
Yeah.
So did you grow up in the Akron area? You said Mansfield.
Mansfield. I grew okay. up in Mansfield.
Okay.
And it was a job that also will come into the story that became my career as a midwife that brought me to Akron. And so, like I said, I moved as a single mom with three daughters and got established for a couple of months after we moved. I drove all the way down south of Mansfield to my old church because mm-hmm. that's where I was really connected, tied into a small group. And they were the ones that helped me move and get settled. Helped me renovate my house up here in Akron. Mm-hmm. So they were just kind of like, I needed them. Mm-hmm. Now, there came a time when traveling an hour and a half one way to church every weekend got to be difficult.
Yeah.
And so we started visiting some churches in the area, and I got a letter in the mail from Grace Church welcoming me as a new neighbor.
Wow.
And when I read through kind of what their purpose and mission was, I thought, this sounds an awful lot like my church mm-hmm. down home. And so we gave it a try. And it was the first church that anybody said hi to us, mm-hmm. asked my name, asked my girls' names, mm-hmm. asked if there was anything that they could pray for me for. Mm-hmm. Pam Buca happened to be the one that met us at the door.
Pam goes all the way back,
Pam
too.
Goes all the way back,
yes. That's a wonderful
yes.
mm-hmm. greeting face.
Right.
Well, right. Well, did you grow up in the church? I would love to hear, like, how you came to meet Jesus.
Yeah, so I was raised in a Christian home. My parents were both Christians. Church was a very, very vital part of our life. We did Sunday school, church, evening church, mm-hmm. Wednesday night Bible study and prayer meeting. Mm-hmm. And then usually there was some other activity during the week mm-hmm. that we participated in. When I was 8 years old, I went to Beulah Beach Church Camp, oh. and that's where I met Jesus. I think that I believed then that I was saved, as they called it.
Okay.
And I always wanted to just do the right thing. I'm the oldest of four daughters to my parents. And so I was mainly the rule follower. But I think growing up in the church like that, it was quite legalistic, I guess we would call it now. Grace wasn't talked about. I don't know that I ever realized that Jesus loved me. I memorized John 3:16, so I knew God so loved the world. But loving me and having a relationship with me, those are terms that I didn't know about until later in life.
What about Jesus himself? Like, some churches in that phase, they might talk about God a lot, but even was a personal relationship with Jesus something that was presented to you?
It was
understand.
No, I think the rules were the big thing. We got preached at, God hates this. You don't go to dances. You don't go to, don't drink. You don't smoke. You don't date people that do and all that kind of stuff. So it was about following the rules, and then you don't go to hell. So if you don't sin, you don't go to hell was kind of the whole crux of it. Mm-hmm. I don't think that all their theology was wrong, but I think it was just kind of either
the relationship is missing, right?
Right.
Rules versus
right.
Relationship.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's what I would say is that's where the disconnect was. It was very religion-based. Yeah. I grew up in that church. I'm a big introvert. And so high school was hard for me because I wasn't allowed to, wear the style of the era, the culture, cultural norms were out of reach for me.
Okay.
I didn't go to dances. Mm-hmm. So I didn't do a lot socially within school. So I didn't have a lot of those kind of connections. So I did date in high school. I dated this one guy off and on. He broke up with me a lot of times, but he also would come back and say, I'm sorry. And then it was all better. Yeah. During my senior year, he asked my parents if he could propose to me.
Wow.
And they said yes, which kind of threw me for a loop because they had plans for me to go to college, and I'd been accepted at college at Taylor University. Mm-hmm. And so I was always conflicted about that whole thing. It's like, well, should I or shouldn't I? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I had hoped to go to college, but I was going to break up with him before I went to college. Mm-hmm. And when I finally decided to do that, it didn't go well.
When you finally decided
to break it off.
Okay.
I did try to break up with him, and when it didn't go well, I ended up deciding we should just get married. I just didn't want the hassles, and I didn't want the arguing.
Wow.
And so we planned a wedding, and by October, after my graduation, I was married at 18.
A breakup that didn't go well led to marriage.
Because I thought my parents knew what they were talking about. And I was insecure about who I was. So he could be very, a very nice guy. But there were parts of him that were not very nice. And my self-esteem was not in any good place. Mm-hmm. And according to the church, his anger issues were because I wasn't doing something. Nobody could pinpoint what I wasn't doing or what I was doing that was causing the anger.
Was he hiding that from the public, or was that something he did like privately only toward you, or was it out?
I think most of it happened to me. So deep down, I think, I knew for a long time that there was something wrong in our marriage. He had two siblings that were gay, and he had a niece that was gay, and he struggled with homosexuality himself. Mm-hmm. He never admitted it to me. He never admitted it to anyone mm-hmm. until just a couple years ago when he finally admitted it to the kids.
Okay.
And so I think that was part of his struggle and some of the struggles in our relationship because mm-hmm. of that. And so, yeah, so it was a rocky road, to say the least.
And you said you were like 18 or 19 mm-hmm. when you entered into right. that relationship.
Right. Okay. And we had our first son when I was 21. Mm-hmm. Second son was 3 years later. And probably the hardest part of this season, if you will, came when my third baby was born and it was a girl. And I loved my boys. I still love my boys. But I came from an all-girl family. My mom had all sisters. And I really wanted a girl
yeah.
that time. And unfortunately, she was born at 24 weeks. It was a rather traumatic birth. Okay. And she passed away before I could hold her or anything.
Okay.
And so that created obviously a lot of grief and anxiety and anger on my part. And there came a point about 5 or 6 weeks after she was born that I couldn't sleep. And I couldn't justify in my mind how, quote unquote, loving God could let something mm-hmm. like that happen
yeah.
to me. And so I got up out of bed and I went out on our back patio. And for a couple of hours, I cried and cried. I yelled at God. I remember calling him some very not nice names.
Hey, listen, grief will do that.
I eventually sat up and just told God with my fist in the air to go away. Mm-hmm. I didn't want anything to do with a God who would take my baby away. And I remember I said it very violently and very end of story, and it got very quiet. My head got quiet. My heart got quiet. It seemed lonely. And after a while, I felt hopeless. And I thought, so if this is what it's like without God, that means I won't see Sarah again. And I don't know how to tell people that I don't believe in God anymore. I don't know what to do. I don't know. And I would say probably I wrestled with that thought for about a half an hour. And I don't remember God, like, trying to change my mind. I just sat with it for a while. And I realized now I think he was just giving me space. Until I finally said, okay, God, I don't know. I don't like this either.
I can't go a half hour without you.
I can't. And I felt that immediately there was a peace that came, even though I was still grieving. And I told God, you've got to lead me. I can't. I don't know what's going on here. I don't even know how to make decisions anymore. Mm-hmm. You've got to make my life obvious.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the beginning of me just wanting God to lead my life. And I realized then, and I knew with all my heart, that God had been there all the time, like right beside me through all of that anger. He just let me be. And then when I cut him out, he's like, okay, here's your space. And let me feel the feels, if you will. So, yeah.
Wow.
So that was big. That was hard.
Yeah.
But it was also a pivot point, if you will.
It was a deepening in your relationship with him?
Like, yeah, absolutely,
like you trust him
because
more?
It's when I realized that I needed a relation. I needed to get to know the God who has my baby, who's mm-hmm. holding my baby, like who let this happen. And I didn't want to think of it in terms of that he was being mean to me, mm-hmm. but I needed to find out more about the character of God. And I remember doing a Bible study and having some time with a friend who kind of answered some questions about God's character. And I thought, So if he's a loving God, then he loves me. And if he's a kind God and he's a just God, and so I need to lean into that. And it didn't mean I wasn't sad anymore. Yeah. But he did bless me with another baby about 11 months after Sarah passed away, which gave my arms something to do while my heart healed. So
may I ask, what layer of complexity or ease did your husband add during this season?
So
a partner goes, and was he involved in your faith with you?
So he was religious. Like, he was moving up the leadership ranks at church. I mean, he had become like a usher and a deacon, and I can't remember if he was like an elder at that point in time, but he was big in the church. And so I would say that he grieved her loss, but not to the degree that I did. And that caused friction, as it oftentimes does between couples.
Absolutely.
Because they thought, you know, he didn't care. But the anger, his cycle of anger kind of continued. And in fact, he would sometimes even have anger outbursts against me in church and have to be asked to leave.
Wow.
So
maintained his position of leadership.
Yes, because again, when they would talk to him about it, they didn't talk to me, they would talk to him about it. And it usually boiled down again to me not doing something or doing something wrong, which nobody would ever identify or could ever identify.
Yeah.
So we had started going to some counseling and marital counseling. And we went with a counselor, and he was a good guy. He would ask me questions, but I never got to speak. And so about, I don't know, maybe 6 months to a year after we had started our counseling, I made an appointment with the counselor by myself. And he didn't know about it. And I sat there with the counselor and I said, "You ask me questions, but I don't ever answer them. He answers them, and they're not always the truth. I don't know what to do about that." And so I think this was about the time that I was in nursing school. I remember after the birth of my sixth child.
Whoa. Fast forward.
Right. So after the birth of my sixth baby, which I had at 28 weeks, and I almost died.
Whoa.
The thought came to me that not only have I now gotten to know God a little bit better and trust in God, but I think he's got something bigger for my life that I need to do. And then I started nursing school.
And how old were you at this point? You could have still been, what, early 30s?
Early 30s, yeah.
You were so young. Okay.
Right.
Wow. So you had a lot of life ahead of you.
Right. And so I decided to go to nursing school. And I felt like God's hand was in that, even because the money showed up for that. One of my friends had a babysitter that she used because she was a teacher and worked full time. And her babysitter volunteered to watch my two youngest as preschoolers while I took classes.
Wow.
So, and I didn't have to pay her.
Okay.
She said, "Well, I'm here anyhow with her kids." So. Yeah. Yeah, so there were lots of affirmations along the way, and it was just a 2-year program, and so I did that.
And that was because you went through these medical traumas yourself?
I think so. I think that had something to do with it, and I don't know. When I was going to go to Taylor University, I was going into medical technology, which was very different than nursing, but I had worked in women's health since I got out of high school. I worked in an OBGYN office.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so women's health was just kind of my thing. And when I graduated from nursing school, I got my first job in labor and delivery up in Norwalk, Ohio.
Mm.
So, at any rate, I was doing that and going to the counseling, of course, with my then husband. And when I talked to this counselor, he showed me this diagram of the cycle of abuse. He said, "Does this look familiar?" And I said, "That's exactly what's mm-hmm. happening." And so he referred me to another woman counselor in their practice who specialized in domestic violence. Mm-hmm. And then he continued working with my mm-hmm. ex. So,
And was there any like, and we should protect you and get you out of this situation?
So there was some talk of that, but things kind of, I want to say, stayed status quo, if you will, until, I'll go back to my nursing school because this is another thing that God just kind of, when I asked God to go before me, This is kind of how things rolled in this story of my career, was all God putting something in front of me and providing for it mm-hmm. at the same time. So like I said, going to my 2-year program and getting my first job in labor and delivery, while I was in labor and delivery, the nurse manager said, "Hey, if you get your bachelor's degree, you get a pay raise and the hospital will pay your tuition." It's like, okay, next step.
Yes.
So I applied to Ashland University and got into their 2+2 program to work on my bachelor's degree. A couple months before graduation, the dean of nursing called me into her office and I thought, oh, no, I'm not going to go. What's going on? What did I do? No, she sat there and she said, "So I've been talking to your preceptors and everybody seems to think that you are gifted in this area of women's health. And my dear friend, Dr. Nancy Lowe wants to see you on Thursday down in Columbus. She's just starting this midwifery program." And I said, "What's a midwife?" And she kind of tried to explain it to me. And I said, I don't know about nurse midwives. I only know about the Amish having mm-hmm. midwives that come into their home.
Something in the Bible or something like that.
Correct. Yeah. And so then she said, no, this is different. And so then I started listing all the reasons I couldn't do that. I can't go down to Columbus. I've got to work. I don't have a babysitter for my kids. My marriage is a wreck. Going to grad school at this point in time is just a bad idea. She said, "Well, let's pray."
No way. Did she know you were a Christian?
No.
Well,
I'd never met this woman in person.
Let's do that to people more often, Bobby. Let's pray.
So she did. She didn't ask me. She just did. She says, "Let's pray." And she started. And I remember sitting there. I don't even remember the words that she said, but thinking, okay, God, I asked you to put these things before me and provide for me. So my answer has to be yes. So 2 days later, I drive to Columbus and I meet with Dr. Lowe. And she said, "So I just filled my last position for this year's midwifery program. But," she said, "I have a graduate teaching assistantship. And if you would like to start your prerequisites, it'd be really great, especially with," because I'd already given her my list of I can'ts. You know, I don't have a babysitter. My marriage is a wreck. I don't have the money. But she had an answer for all of them. And didn't she say, "Let's pray"?
Nuh-uh.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
So we prayed. And I'm sitting there thinking, and I'm crying at this point in time because it's like, I don't even know what to do.
Yeah.
But God provided a job. She said, "You won't make as much as in your nursing job, but maybe you can pick up one day a week nursing and still keep up the pace." And so that fall, I was in grad school and still not believing that this was happening.
Mm-hmm. And this is in Columbus. You have six
kids. I have to drive from Mansfield to Columbus.
Yeah. And you're still married and you have six children. And
I have five living children.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. That are teenagers to toddlers at this point in time.
Body.
So, you know, my friend was still babysitting for me, for the girls when I needed it. And another lady from my old church volunteered to clean my house every 2 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
So she came in and like a whirlwind would clean everything, wow. do laundry. So that seemed good, except things on the home front were not going well.
Well, it sounds like a distraction that kept you away even more and probably
there was that,
recruited then, even more.
Right. So even though I had always meals prepared and everything done at home before I went to school, it still was, things were falling apart. And he was struggling more and more with mental illness issues. So after grad school started about February, he tried to commit suicide in front of the kids.
What?
So that was really hard. He was very angry that evening and left the bedroom, and I stayed in there, and he came out. I could hear something happening in the living room, but I wasn't sure. We had a two-story home with an open staircase, and I didn't realize that my oldest daughter was watching television in that room. And anyhow, he tried to hang himself. And I heard her saying, "Daddy, stop, Daddy, stop." And I came out and he was hanging there. It wasn't as bad as it sounds, but it was bad. And so I cut him down and he proceeded to go out. It's middle of February. It's freezing outside. He took his bathrobe off and went out in his underwear to try and freeze to death. So that woke up the youngest. It was just kind of a bad scene.
Yeah,
and I didn't know who to call or what to do. I eventually drug him in to the house and got him warmed up, sat with my girls for a while until everybody fell asleep in a heap. And we got up and went to church the next day.
All like, of you?
Except for him.
Okay.
And acted like nothing had happened. And my mom said something to me about asked where he was. And I said, "Well, he's sleeping. He tried to kill himself last night." You know, she was shocked.
Mm-hmm.
And so after church, she came over and she talked to him and got him convinced that he should call his counselor, which he did. Anyhow, the next day, he went to a psychiatric hospital for an evaluation and was admitted. So I guess I thought that was hope, you know, that things would get better. But I got the kids into counseling, and about 3 or 4 weeks into the counseling, the counselor pulled me aside and said, "Listen, you need to separate, or Children's Services is going to get involved." On this was a Friday, and she said Children's Services would be called on Monday.
Wow.
So again,
how did that make you feel?
Scared to death, because I already knew what the risk was by asking him to leave. And I didn't want to pack up all of my kids and go try to find someplace else to live. So I prayed all the way home from the counselors. I called my mom. I said, "Elizabeth just can't be here tonight." And she said, "Okay." And when my then husband came home, I told him what the scene was, that, you know, we needed. I didn't tell him about Children's Services. I just said, you know, that we needed to separate. And this was another God moment where his face changed. And he goes, "You know what? I can just go stay with my sister."
In a moment of agreeance and
right
ease for you.
Right.
Wow.
And I tried not to act too surprised. But yes, I said that might be a good idea. And so he packed up his bags and he left. And I ended up having to get a restraining order, which he didn't always follow. But my dad and mom lived sort of close to us. And when my dad saw him come down, he would also come down.
Wow.
So at any rate, that was the last that we lived together.
Okay.
And for the next couple of years, we worked on things, but it was hard because he was struggling with his own demons, if you will, and what was going on with him. And we eventually divorced just before I moved up to Akron. So I can, I don't know, I want to talk a little bit about how I ended up in Akron, because I went to graduate school. And of course, this happened my first year, the start of my second year. My Dr. Lowe, who was very, very aware of what was happening, mm-hmm. because she checked in on me a lot during those days, and to make sure that I was okay and that I was going to be successful. And so I told her, or she called me into the office and said, so next year for your clinicals, I'm going to send you to Akron. There's a practice up to in Akron that I want you to be part of. And I cried. Akron. Like, I couldn't figure out how I was going to go to Columbus to yeah. school and then drive to Akron
opposite
for this
direction.
Right?
Literally, like, Mansfield's the middle point that everybody uses as a bathroom break between
correct.
Akron correct. And Columbus.
And we don't even have a nice bathroom at that Route 30 intersection. But at any rate, I cried. She prayed.
Bless it.
And she said, well, here's the deal. She said, I just got this letter from the dean or the president saying that we have available some traineeships. And she said, I can offer you this traineeship and you don't have to teach anymore. And it's twice as much money as you are taking. You just have to take extra. You would graduate early. Yeah. Now, that all fits in because after I started my clinicals, the head midwife at my new clinical site said, do you want a job? And I'm just like blown away by all of this because God is literally putting the next stone for where I'm supposed to go down in front of me. And so I said yes, mm-hmm. Scared to death that I was ever going to get it figured out.
Mm-hmm. That's his promise. He's going to light the path.
Correct.
And the light doesn't shine all the way down the road.
It doesn't.
It just
I had no idea. No idea that it would lead to a career that I loved and fit so well. No idea that it would be something that I found hard to leave eventually when it was time to retire. No idea the amount of friends that I would make because of it. No idea how God would infiltrate my entire life.
Do you walk around Grace Church and you just, you know how some of us, I'll be like, oh, I had you in Bible camp. I had you at sports camp. I caught you as a baby. I don't know. I feel like all my friends went to Bobby. It's like just this gift. You're like, you use that word early on when you're explaining your career. Somebody mm-hmm. said, I think you might be gifted at mm-hmm. this women's mm-hmm. health side of things.
And I think had God not walked with me through the journeys that I have, losing a baby, of a hard marriage, of me learning to lean first and ask questions later, lean into God mm-hmm. first and ask questions later. I think God redeemed all of those things. Like, I think sometimes that, like, I think of Daniel in the lion's den. He still was in the lion's den.
Yeah.
But God was there.
Yep.
He still was in the hard thing.
Heading into the lion's den.
He did not know it. He only knew that he was going to follow God no matter what.
Yeah.
And I think of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They had no idea when they got thrown in the fiery furnace what the outcome would be.
And wasn't it them that said, he will either redeem us through the fire, in the fire, or from the fire, because he'll have to stop it from happening.
Exactly.
We'll die and we'll get to be with him,
exactly.
Or he'll change the guy to even not right. happen. And
exactly. And I think, too, of Paul writing to all of the churches from prison.
Mm.
From prison. And yet he's saying, so my favorite verse is Philippians 4:8. Mm. You know, all the whatsoever is true, lovely, think on those things.
And if you remember anything that I told you, live that way.
Live that way, yeah. Correct. Yeah. And I think that though, if Paul can do it, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego can do it. If Daniel can do it, why am I not called to it too? Mm. But I think that in remembering that God is in it, whether I see it or feel it, if I remember his heart that loves me, that goes before me, and that sometimes he just sits with me and there's space, even if I don't feel it, he's still there. I just need to lean a little. Mm-hmm. And it's in that leaning that he supports us and that we can then feel it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. I'm just picturing you back in that night when you cried out to him, not unlike David, or, you know, what is it like? I don't want to say numbers, but majority, let's just say majority of the Psalms are lamenting.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And David is very plainly upset, angry, sad, mourning, grieving, and being very clear with God how he feels about it. And it almost always ends with, but I remember your miracles. Mm-hmm. I remember your provision, your mercies, your all these things. And you know what? So God just like, check out my heart, make sure I'm pure, and then show me the everlasting way.
Right.
You know, if we live like that, then.
And I don't think at the time that I did that, that I recognized it as that, but the pattern that has come from that, the remembering that pivot point, if you will, where I decided that I wasn't going to be identified by my grief. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to be identified by a failed marriage. I wasn't going to be identified as a failure, that I was allowed to not be perfect and I was still loved.
Yeah.
I think that those are where God redeems us and we feel held.
Mm.
At least I did.
Yeah. And then you get to share that testimony with the world as you're doing right now. And then people that might look at you and be like, oh, Bobby Claypool, and she has this great, you know, career as Akron's, you know, baby catcher and all that, or whatever they might look at you and think, and all the things we see here at Grace. And then they just hear, oh, man, me too, girl. Mm-hmm. I went through one piece of this story. Somebody might hear and relate and be able to think, oh, I'm not. And maybe they're a young person. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're a young person in a challenged relationship, a challenged, like, loss of a dream, loss of a child, loss of a anything. Mm-hmm. And they're listening to you saying, oh, my gosh, there's still time. There's still hope. It can be redeemed.
Right. I talked to some of the young adults in collective who are frustrated and upset because they, you know, they thought they were going to go to college and they were going to be this certain thing, but then they realized that that's not really their bent, and that's, this program's not what they thought it was going to be. Now, what are they going to do?
It's over. I have nothing.
Yeah,
I have nothing then.
I said, I didn't go to college until I was 36 years old. 36, and I had 5 kids. Mm. So you don't have to do it now. It'll be there when the timing is right. Mm-hmm. Just go be a functional adult. Mm-hmm. You know, get
take
your 2 feet wet.
Step.
Yeah. And just take one day at a time. Don't think about what you have to be someday.
Sure. Yeah.
Just be what God needs you to be today.
And it's important that we're vulnerable like that. So for you to mentor people or speak that truth is really important, because guess what doesn't speak that truth? The internet, social media, they paint this picture that is impossible to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're left feeling insufficient. Gosh, you went through all that and the social media wasn't even around yet. Praise the Lord.
No.
Right?
That probably was the saving grace. I didn't have to compare myself.
At least.
But the church, I mean, I do think that the shaming of the church needed to stop. And that was one thing that when I came to Grace that I heard, that I'm not identified as that divorced woman. Mm. I'm not identified as that single mom.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and even the story about how Scott and I met, we'll celebrate 20 years of marriage this fall.
What date?
November 22nd.
We are September 23rd, 20 years.
Well, there you go.
How about that? Yes. And we were in a marriage class together. What? It would have been like 10 years ago, probably. I don't think I realized that I'm sure I knew that
yes.
we were married. The exact same.
Uh-huh.
That's so funny.
That is.
Because we would have been around 10 years at that time.
When that's
we
were true.
Because it was like, it was like 2015, 16. Anyways, I want to hear about how you and Scott met. So first of all, I want to go back a little bit.
Sure.
You moved to Mansfield, to Akron, and your marriage had already ended at that time?
Yes.
Okay. So you when came I'm... here, you were single, and you said your three daughters, because your sons were married. You said that at the very beginning when you left us on the edge of our seats. Okay. So you came up here and then found grace. And were you like going to the, you know, I don't know, hoping to find love as you came to Akron?
I had no intention whatsoever. That I had three daughters to finish raising, and I had a career that kept me very busy, and with the call and the office hours that I kept, I closed that door. Mm-hmm. Had no intention of finding anybody else. I was content with where God had brought me at that point in time. Like I said, Pam Buca was one of the first people that said hi to me, and I was hoping to find a small group, but Jeff was busy making his disciples during that first year, and he had created a small group with his core leaders, and that he told me it would be about a year before they would have small groups open to the rest of the congregation.
This is when he first started the Zath campus.
Correct.
Coming up here from Pearson. So that was what,
2000? 2000.
Period.
2000.
Okay.
Yes, that was January of 2000. He started the Bath campus, and it was in, I think, the 1st of October that we stepped foot in Grace Church. Mm. And the girls liked it, and I liked it, and we stayed. And sure enough, about a year after that, the Amons started a life group at the Buca's house. Mm-hmm. And so
you're saying more Pillar Grace names. In case anybody doesn't know these names, I'm nodding along like, oh, my gosh, the Buca's and the Amons. Like,
right. They were core people and people that I learned to trust their wisdom and that supported me when I needed help. Running a household and a house by myself. Mm-hmm. And so, in 2001, I believe it was, there was a man that walked into the church by himself. And of course, he sat just behind Pam Buca. And so after church, Pam turns around and she says, "Hi, how are you?" Mm-hmm. "I'm Pam."
She does.
And then immediately she tapped me on the shoulder because I was in front of her and said, "This is Scott Claypool." And I invited him to our life group. And I went,
okay. Tell me that.
Why would you tell me that?
It wouldn't matter to me.
Yes. And he started coming to that life group too. And we didn't talk to each other. We kind of had different ideas about each other as people. And I think that neither one of us were completely healed enough to take on a relationship or had thought about a relationship at that point in time. And so we spent the next 2 years kind of ignoring each other.
Wow.
Kind of nice to each other, like in small group.
Yep.
He thought I was a librarian because of my being a little bit of an introvert and a book nerd. And I just thought he was a sports nerd.
Yeah.
And neither of those assumptions are completely wrong.
Right.
But it wasn't until
it would appear correct.
Correct.
Once you got to know the deeper parts of the soul.
One day I came to church in my scrubs. I'd been up all night delivering babies. And I came to church. And after church, Pam Buca, Marcy Stafford, And Regina Amon were standing in a group, and we were talking, and Scott came up, and Pam looked at me, and she goes, "So what are you going to do today?" And I said, "I'm going to eat, I'm going to sleep, I'm going to take a shower, and I have 14 oak trees in my front yard, I'm going to rake leaves." And Pam looked up at Scott and said, "And you're going to go over and help her. What time are you going to be raking leaves?" Scott goes, "I can't do that today, I have soccer practice." Mm-hmm. And so it's like, it's okay. I don't need help.
Mm-hmm.
If Pam could have reached up and choked him, I think she would have. But she said, "Well, why don't you just do it now?" And so he relented. He said, "Well, I'm going to go home and change." And I say, "You go do that, dude." So he did. And he did come over. And we spent the next 3.5 hours laughing and really getting to know each other on a deeper level. Mm-hmm. And he invited me to brunch the next Sunday after church. And here we are, 2 years later, we got married. And
wow.
Yeah. So that's, again, all those things are just because, not because I decided that I wanted that, but right. because God also in that interim, besides just healing my heart from a hard relationship, also confirmed with me that it was the right, I made the right decision, because I realized that my ex had never come into any kind of accountability. He had never told his pastor. Nobody knew about. And so that kind of confirmed my decision that I had done the right thing in leaving the marriage where it was.
I heard somebody say once in a scenario like that, that she saw it as more brave, more courageous to leave than to stay. And I think about like me asking, wait a minute, so this counselor who's identifying the cycle of abuse doesn't say, let's get this lady out of here, right. you know, and I think of the other counselor who said, I have to tell you that your children will get taken away because I'm hearing from them. And like, thank you to her. Obviously, that's a very, very hard scenario to be in regardless. But I just sometimes think we need to go and rescue the person and get them out of that situation if we know. You know, so anyways, thinking of that as like a brave and bold thing to do versus something to be ashamed of.
Right, right, right. And I think that it also took getting out of the legalistic situation of the my home church, if you will, into a church that spoke grace and that could take the scriptures that had been misquoted for so many years to me and put context to them and meaning to them in a way that I could apply to my own life, that it didn't feel like a bondage, that I had to stay in that relationship in spite of what was happening, that God never intended, that wasn't his model for marriage, and that it wasn't God-honoring marriage. So, yeah, so I mean, I think it was at that time that I kind of had come to that realization that it was never going to be repaired. And then when Scott and I raked the leaves that day and I had fun, it kind of opened that door. Like God kind of opened my heart a little bit. It had been sealed shut and it opened the door to at least getting to know him better.
Yeah.
And
he seems like a guy that likes to have fun.
He does. And I needed to have fun. I was too serious.
Well, right. And you probably didn't even know that that kind of love could exist.
Correct.
And you were opened up to whole new worlds.
Yeah.
So and like you said, complicated, blending families.
Right.
And said that he needed to heal from something as well. So
he'd been divorced. So, yeah, there was that on his side of it. And so, yeah, he had to kind of.
Just messy people trying to be messy together as best we can.
But we healed a lot first, I think, before that. And during our engagement, even, I think that because we had wise pillars of the church in our lives to kind of hold us accountable and we let ourselves be accountable, that we were able to start a healthy relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. And that even then, what... 6, 7, 8 years later, you did that marriage course, which we did too. So kind of a shout out to that. Grace has these things happening all the time. Or you're never too early, never too late to do something like that. To strengthen that.
Keep it going.
Or, yeah.
Keep your focus.
Because there is so much that can be redeemed. I know I was talking about being brave and bold in leaving, but also there's so much that can be redeemed, which is why I think it can get tricky. And Satan can have a lot of fun in that sandbox.
Oh, for sure.
And be all kinds of tricky to like, divide, distract, destroy, devour, all those things, the individual, the marriage, all that. And so it takes those pillars to help speak truth. And not only that, just like trained professionals with specific licensing
Absolutely.
As well. We're very pro counseling and take that step. If you're listening and you hear this and that's something you've been hesitating to do.
Absolutely.
Definitely encourage that.
Right. And even Scott and I have had seasons where getting a trained counselor involved, especially, you know, some of my past will sometimes get triggered, and it's like I feel myself falling. And it's been good to be able to tap in to a trained counselor. We use Free to Be. And it's helpful kind of to start picking all those little pieces apart, because the only way you put the puzzle back together the way it's supposed to be is to take it apart first. And so I've appreciated the professional perspectives.
Highly recommend. And even if you're hearing this and you're wondering more about Bobby's story, she has agreed that if somebody wants to reach out to us, we have an email address here at Grace Unscripted. You can email us and we'll get you in contact with her, with me, with anybody at the church that might be helpful to you. But you can email us at unscripted@graceohio.org. And again, we'll get you in touch either with Bobby if something resonated from her story, or anybody, guys. We have counseling resources. She mentioned Free to Be. I'm also a Free to Be client. What's that commercial? Not only am I the president, I'm also the client. I am not afraid to say that. You know, that is something that I was 10 years ago, very afraid to say, very afraid to do. Mm-hmm. And now reaping the benefit and the reward of that is something that I want to make sure people are aware of. Is a good thing to try again if you don't find the right fit. You know, it's not that counseling didn't work for you, it's just that you need to find the right fit.
Right.
You know, like,
and sometimes that takes time and starting to peel the onion back a little bit.
Good. Mm-hmm. But it's hard an ending that can be brighter and more beautiful than a little we can imagine.
I like something that Jeff said Sunday. I wrote it down here. He said, "We often want God to take our pain away, but God wants to redeem our pain." And I think that just, when he said that, I went, yes, sir, I can vouch for that. Mm. And I like being able to say that God redeemed it too. It's not, I couldn't have done it. I look back at my life and I couldn't have scripted it better. Mm. I couldn't have asked for a better outcome for my life than to know Jesus, to love Jesus, to have him every bit of every part of everything.
Yeah.
And to heal doesn't mean that things aren't sad. Sarah's birth is coming up on 45 years ago, so that's a long time, right? And people think, well, yeah, sure, you know, 45 years ago, but it's still, you feel it. There's a piece of my heart missing. Yeah. And I do grieve that my kids had to live through a broken marriage, that their parents didn't represent a godly marriage for most of the time that they were growing up. So I grieve those things, but I also believe that God is a God of redeeming everything for a reason. And that he doesn't make those things happen to us. We live in a fallen world.
We do.
But he's there to help pick up the pieces.
Yeah, it's just your version of fallen.
Absolutely.
And it's deep.
Right.
And it's rocky.
Right.
It's a rough one. But I was reading about resiliency recently. And you really can't have resiliency unless you have high and low. Like, you can't be resilient from something unless you crash and have to recover.
Correct.
Just in our bodies, right?
Right.
Even in physiologically, like, if you're even keel and don't have like a high and a low, that is what resiliency is. Mm-hmm. It's the recovery from low back to high, or whatever those measures need to be. And that really, you know, I was very angry that I was like having to be resilient. And then it was more so like, celebrating that, like, you did that, you were resilient, and you know, your body recovered and all these different things,
right?
Versus if I didn't have those things, then I would just, even keel sounds really nice from a distance, but you know, the joys and the sorrows come together to be our story, and we can grow in strength and resiliency and then share that with others.
Absolutely.
And help them through when they need strength and resiliency.
Yeah, those are the times I feel like I feel the redemption. Like, I feel, okay, God used this hard thing for his glory. So it was hard.
Yeah.
But it was good.
extra glory when it's extra hard for God,
for us. Right. Absolutely.
Oh, my. Okay. Well, one of the things we do here on Unscripted is I like to tie a song to our stories. We all have, you know, maybe this is for you, but like that worship that is so special and personal to each of us. Mm-hmm. So we have a playlist on Spotify, Unscripted Worship. Mm-hmm. And look it up on Spotify. Follow us there. Mm-hmm. And Bobby, what song would you like to add the Unscripted playlist?
I would have to say that C.C. Winans' Goodness of God is at the top of my list.
Yes. I will sing of the goodness of God all my life.
I have been faithful
all my life.
You have been good. So good.
So with every breath
that I am able, I will sing of the goodness of God.
I think that's like what the last psalm says, isn't it? Isn't it like until I have my last breath, I will praise the Lord.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That is such a good song. You're mm-hmm. right. All my life, you have been faithful. All my life, you have been so, so good. I like it. Anything else like resonate for you with that or an experience when you heard
it? I think my whole life can resonate with that song. I think the first time that I heard her sing that, I thought, wow, that's my life song. Mm. Like it just is. It's not just a song that I like as a worship song. It speaks my life.
Yeah.
Because you did love my life.
You believed in God your whole life, it sounds, based on being raised in the church. And while there was bumps in along that way, like your heart was desiring to be obedient to God, desiring to love and be loved by God. And you just matured in that over and over as you learned new things.
Right.
Got deeper with him.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazing. Anything else if you were, you know, to give a final word to anybody that you want them to think back on your story?
I think just to give people the confidence that God is there. When you don't feel him, when you don't see him, when you're not sure that you can lean into him. I think people tend to get focused on the problem. How am I going to fix this? How am I going to get out of this? How can I make this go away? And I think what God is calling us to do is to look to him. And it's like Philippians 4 says, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are good report, if there's any virtue, if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on those. And so rather than focusing on the problem, look for where Jesus is sitting in front of you. This always ahead of you. I mean, you know, in front of you, ahead of you. Mm-hmm. I think of Moses when he's standing with the Israelites at the sea and they're all complaining because the water's right in front of them. But God was upstream turning it off so that they couldn't be chased across.
Yeah.
And they couldn't see it. And instead of just believing that God was doing it, they were looking what's right in front of their faces. Mm-hmm. And so when I think of advice, it's like, don't just look for the obvious. Mm-hmm. Don't be critical of God because he didn't do it your way. Mm-hmm. Sometimes he has a different way for it.
Sure. Or then the contrary to that would be Abraham, who said, hey, I know you said I was going to be the father of nations and this is my only kid right now,
right?
But I'm believing in you're going to do it however it happens. So here, I'll give him to you. I'll surrender and sacrifice him to you,
right?
Whatever that looks like. Mm-hmm. And he went all the way to that point
and raised the knife.
Yes. And then the ram was revealed. And yeah, let's be like that.
Mm-hmm.
Have that faith. Yeah. He will fulfill it.
Right.
He's shown you. And I love the ways that you heard from God. Mm-hmm. That's really cool that he revealed.
He's always there, even when I felt like he wasn't.
Whispering in the wind.
He revealed that he was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for sharing your story here, Bobby.
Sure. It was, I was a little nervous.
But you did great. And your story is going to resonate and it's going to serve the Lord.
Yeah. Well, I hope that it does that. I hope that people see Jesus because of it.